What could go wrong? This was the title I thought, you know. It's pretty funny when we design software, right? You remember these memes when someone is drinking water in QA and the abuser is trying to drink the water in all the different cases? This is what we thought we should talk a bit more about today, because we think that security is missing quite a big aspect on the design side. So today we're going to talk a little bit about UI. And specifically about this, are you sure, confirmation dialogue. You probably have seen some of them in one way or the other. It introduces a lot of ambiguity as well. It's so hard I can even barely say the word ambiguity. I'm not a native speaker, but neither is this guy as well. But no one is really sure if you want to do that. I probably will never be able to get French citizenship after this talk, but it's all right. So a lot of these confirmation dialogues are introducing major security issues, which are left on the user. You know, as developers, we think this is easy, right? But sometimes it's not. I didn't want to take an example of Windows as well, but this is not a good example, so I thought, yeah, sure, we can do it. This is one deletion dialogue in Windows 10, and the first one is pretty okay, the second one, not so much. Can someone of you tell me what is the difference in the second one? Why is the second one worse? Anyone has any ideas?
Missing details.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, it doesn't tell you what it's going to do.
Missing details, it's not saying what it's going to do. And yeah, I think that's right. The first one is pretty good because you are deleting something and it tells you, like, maybe it's your baby photos from, I don't know, in the 90s. Maybe you don't want them deleted. And that's fine. You get the metadata here. But in the second one, you don't have these two, this information. You are just deleting two items. Imagine you're going quickly to the bathroom. You go back. You don't know what you are deleting, right? And maybe you click on yes because you are sure, right? As well, let alone the fact that these are using two different icons here, one time an X and one time a warning sign for the same kind of action. So this is like a very simple thing we are looking at. So basically, the issue happens when developers think that the users understand security as much as they do. And there's a gap as well. So some of you might know the privacy paradox as well. Now, I know security and privacy is not the same thing. But for the sake of the argument, I'm making them the same thing here on this slide as well. So in 2001, there was some research called the privacy paradox, and it describes very well how people think they care about privacy and how what they really do. So you might know after 2013, after the Snowden leaks, people were very angry. Like, what are we doing? We need to change something. I don't think there's a lot of things changing since then. So this is the privacy paradox. The people's behavior towards what they actually do and how they feel about it. It's a pretty big gap. So this is what we want to talk a little bit more about today, considering that we have only one microphone today. I'm just doing a little bit of an introduction as well. We are from URA Design. I'm Elio, and this is Anya as well. We do design and research, especially in open source, open science, and human rights projects. And today we are here because we believe that code audits shouldn't be the only thing we should look for in security audits and anything which touches security. There's a lot of attack surface on the UX side as well. And today we're going to touch a little bit more on the UI side too. And for this, I'm going to leave the microphone to my colleague Anya. And I need a second for this, which is always very fun. And she's going to talk a little bit about some use cases we have.
Thank you, Adiel. Can we bring back what's up?
What's up?
Thank you. Okay, so we will showcase two of the key studies or works that we have conducted that focus on security critical projects, like Elio mentioned. Okay, first one is CubesOS. Who here is familiar with CubesOS? Not you, Marta. Not you. Okay. Yes, Neil, can you mention what KubeZOS is? Mm-hmm. It works on virtual machines, disposable virtual machines. And they are very customizable, very flexible, and they work through isolation, so they don't communicate with each other. So KubeZOS is very powerful, but it is very complex. And as designers, our first thoughts are to simplify the design, but sometimes by simplifying the design, we might remove some security layers. So the project for our goal was to clarify, but without creating guesswork. We first started with a UX copy audit, where our goal was to create actionable, clear, and concise labels to reduce the cognitive debt that Elio mentioned as well. And second, creating an clear icon system based on Lucide to create more pixel perfect icons and creating color consistency as well. And the UI redesign. We refined the visual design by creating scannable information architecture as well, but also adding more support on text and creating a cohesive system throughout the whole, not only the global configuration, but also throughout all the cubes. Second case study is Mailvelope. Is anybody here by any chance familiar with Mailvelope? Okay, you in the back. Yes, thank you. So indeed, it is a browser extension. It works through webmail, and it provides encryption through email. So all your emails are encrypted. The process is you have to add it as an add-on on your browser and create a configuration key, encryption key, and then you can start with communicating with your clients, friends, and everybody. So before we started the UX and UI copy, we conducted some user interviews to understand where users were struggling. What were the pain points? Did they have any troubles creating a key, first of all, and then communicating with people? And the first problem we faced was that after users were creating said key, the configuration screen was just a block of text and just one simple sentence saying, go to key server. And this created many, many problems because users could not see that they could download a key to communicate with their people in the email. So in order to go to the key server, it was no clear instructions. So what we did, we redesigned the screen in order to be more consistent with the UI, but also to have a functionable call to action button that redirects users to go to the key server. Yes, another issue we faced was also users were creating an encrypted email, but it was unclear if also the subject was encrypted. They could not understand if only the email, only the subject, or both, or neither were encrypted. So in order to do that, we redesigned the subject line saying with a sentence that, hey, this subject line is not encrypted, so beware of that, because a lot of people were including sensitive information and it was unclear as well. And the second change we made was at the bottom, the call to action button, it was also changed to send encrypted message. Before it was just send or sign only, and it was unclear for users if it's encrypted or not. So, yeah. We made more changes, the CC button as well, the drag and drop file, but those were not related to security. I mean, they are, don't get me wrong. Yes, so these two case studies, but also other works that we've done in the past, have led us into creating a framework that we are using to audit and help other projects as well, which Elio is going to speak more about. But I need to pass the microphone.
This talk was meant to be more interactive, but we thought we shouldn't do this all the time, so. Does anyone remember the Hawaii incident in 2018 where they got like a missile alert? Yeah? Yeah? Do you remember what happened?
Oh yes, there are some tests such as alarm that the state can send to you to check if it's working. But they normally, they had a list of code to test, like test, a missile is arriving. Actual alert, a missile is arriving. And they did a mistake and they sent this alert that made their entire island be a bit scared.
It's also because they weren't the buttons, they looked like hyperlinks as well.
Yes, indeed. It's a bit hard to summarize this for the video, but yeah, basically the UI had some links and it was barely noticeable if you are sending it to production, you know, to a real alert to actual people on the island, or whether you're just doing a test alert. One could say, I read in the Reddit comments, which is never a good thing to do, but what someone said, at least it's not the opposite, you know, that something real happened. So because these things inspire us to create a little bit of a framework, we understand that these things are not binary, but also there must be some kind of guidance you can actually think about. So we introduced the secure user UI heuristics interface frameworks, which we're going to work on the title. This is a working title, don't worry, it's going to be shorter, which is basically like a little bit of a best practice in security auditing together with Nielsen Norman's 10 UX heuristics, but apply to a lot of the kind of work we do. So it treats graphical user interface failures as potential security failures. These are not separate as well. We basically anticipate failure, and based on this framework, there are 10 different parts, and they will. You can basically follow this, not as a checklist, but more as a best guidance. It identifies where there might be security issues. People might rush, might guess, might, I don't know, just click on I accept terms and conditions and things like that, you know? So it's basically made out of three pillars. The first one is the cognitive pillar, and that could be mental load as well. A lot of debt, cognitive debt as well. So do you know these UI where you see so much red and green? You know, you don't know what is right and what is wrong anymore. These kind of things create a lot of mental load. And once the user is kind of desensitized to these things, they also don't care much about these UI anymore as well. So there's a lot of things we can do to really be intentional on where do we warn people and when we do not. We also don't forget about accessibility. The accessibility also is very important on this side of things. So imagine if you are not able to read the page, you can do a lot of mistakes, which can be security mistakes as well. And the classical thing is, if you want to be WCAG compliant, what we see as able-bodied people should be also what the code says. You know these shitty newsletters, sorry I said this on video, on where you have a PNG image, but it's not readable, there's no text, there's no nothing, people cannot read it. It might be, I don't know, an Amber Alert in Hawaii, and you are not able to read it because it was an image. So that is also affecting security in this sense. And we also have a technical pillar as well, which evaluates how the system behaves and how states changes and what's the latency. Is there something wrong if you have 3G, you don't have 5G? Is there something which can happen? So this framework tries to figure out all of these to make sure that the usability is the best it can be. We're starting with UI here because it should be a layer to a security audit by people like Carol, who does security audits for a living as well. And other security firms don't do a lot of design audits. So this is not supposed to replace it, but just to be a layer on top of it. So basically, the methodology of this would be that we look for specific heuristics, as we mentioned. We identify what critical workflows we have. Of course, you cannot give the same kind of attention to a random about us page to, you know, delete my account page. So we really got to weigh things out here. As well as every identified risk, there will be a happy path and there will be a risk mode. You know, what's the best thing you can do? And what's the, you know, worst thing which can happen? And also, what's the recommendation? And also, there will be scoring for every kind of thing we are looking for here. So yeah, it's more about reasoning, you know, rather than a checklist of things. And with that, we also collaborated with a lot of projects. You might have seen two of them here. We collaborated with Tor, Mozilla, Wikimedia, and a lot of projects under the Open Technology Fund. Currently, we are working with Sequoia PGP as well. So we saw a pattern here that we really got to do something about this because I don't think there's a lot of information around here. So yeah. The framework is still a work in progress. We look forward to make a first version in Q2 where it will be licensed under, I don't want to say things, but probably Creative Commons license. And we will, yeah, reach out to us if you want an early version as well. And thank you so much. And we look forward to questions and hope this will be useful to your upcoming projects as well.